Welcome to another week of our verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired word. Today we pick up in Genesis chapter number 1, verse number 9, where we discuss the third day of creation. Now, as we're approaching this issue again, I want to recommend highly the different websites that I referenced a few days ago that deal specifically with the issue of creationism versus evolution. And those are, in order, I think, of ease of use, answersingenesis.org, which is a very popular approach to the issue. They got a lot of kids' things. Then you have icr.org, which has an awful lot of technical, scientific-oriented things, because their members, the people who are on staff and that are associated with this group, are all persons with PhDs in various sciences, including some heavy-duty earth sciences. But they approach things from the standpoint of scientists who do take the Bible at face value. And so I'd recommend that. And then the last one is discovery.org/ID, which is the Discovery Institute. They are not Bible thumpers. They are not Bible pushers. They are simply scientists of various disciplines who say we must, in good faith, keep an open mind as to how things came into existence. And since things look designed, we have to leave open the possibility that there is a designer of unknown identity out there. And so those are really good websites to go through when you're wanting to deal with the various issues of creationism. Now, we've already looked at days 1 and 2, when God, first of all, created all matter in a great big liquid pool, and then he creates light, so he brings energy into the equation. That's all day 1. Then we move to day 2, when he begins to take that matter and stretch most of it outward, where it's going to become the matter that makes up the universe. And then underneath the firmament, which is the dividing point for all of that, we have the rest of this liquid matter that becomes, I think, what we refer to as the globe of Earth. And then we barely talked about it when we closed off on Friday, the creation on day number 3 of what is likely the supercontinent that people refer to today as Pangaea. So Genesis chapter 1, verse 9 says, God said, let the waters under the heavens be gathered together in one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. So this is when the earth actually starts taking the form that we are familiar with, that the majority of the surface of the earth is liquid, while you have the more solid portions that rise up above sea level, and that's where we're able to live. And verse 10, God called the dry land earth, and specifically land is what we're thinking about, and the waters that were gathered together he called seas, and God saw that it was good. And we've seen that phrase before. This is where everything is proceeding as God intended. He has an overarching plan here. He is preparing a place for the climax of his creation to live. And the climax of his creation is going to be humanity. And so he's basically making the home for humanity. And everything is going according to plan. Now, the supercontinent, I really do believe, broke up during the flood. And we'll talk more about it at that time. But I'm going to bring in at this juncture something from the book of Job. that touches on this idea of the creation of the earth itself, that is the dry land, the place where mankind is going to live. Because this is the first time that we will acknowledge the existence of the servant class of creation, that would be the angelic host, the angelic creatures that are doing God's bidding. And I want to read to you from Job chapter 38, starting at verse number 3. Now keep in mind, this is where God is responding to Job's insistence, if God would just come down here and explain to me why things happen to me, why things have to be the way they are, then that would be fine. And so God does speak to him, but it is in such a way as to remind him, you don't understand the majority of things in the universe. Why do you think you would understand these fine details of why things are happening to you? So Job 38, verse 3, we have God speaking to Job. Dress for action like a man. I will question you, and you will make it known to me. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? Or on what were its bases sunk? Or who laid its cornerstone when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy? So God's basically asking Job, where were you when I created planet Earth? When I did all the construction work of the land itself where people were going to live? When I brought solidness up out of the liquid of planet Earth? And then he mentions at the same time that that's when the morning stars sang, when all the sons of joy or of God shouted for joy. Now, morning stars and sons of God are parallel. And these are poetic ways of referring to the angelic beings. And at this time, all of them were holy and perfect. It will not be until after the creation of mankind that Satan and his bunch will rebel. And when we get to that point, we'll talk about how there's good evidence that it was actually the creation of mankind that caused Satan and his angels to object to God's plans. But here we have them clearly watching and applauding and cheering as God is bringing the land up out of the water on planet Earth on day number 3. Because the next thing that's mentioned is the liquid issue. Verse 8, or who shut in the sea with doors when it burst out from the womb, when I made clouds its garment and thick darkness its swaddling band, and prescribed limits for it and set bars and doors and said, thus far you shall come and no farther, and here shall your proud waves be stayed. So that's all a reference to what we were just reading about the creation of the supercontinent surrounded by the superocean. And that's the clear dividing line that God established at that point. Back to Genesis chapter 1 now. Genesis chapter 1, verse 11. God said, let the earth, so that's the land, sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit, which is their kind, each according to its kind on the earth. And it was so. And the earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed according to their own kinds, trees bearing fruit in which is their seed, each according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. There was evening, there was morning, the third day. So the land becomes the location for all of these various plants of different sizes, from little bitty tiny things all the way up to great big trees. These plants are intended to be an ongoing mechanism of support for the earth. And we know that now from our own science. Not only do the plants provide the source of energy for all life on Earth, because it soaks up all that energy from the sun, brings up all that energy out of the minerals, and provides food at the very bottom of the food chain, they also support the atmosphere, because they soak up all of the carbon dioxide and pump out all the oxygen that we need and all the animals need to live off of. So on this third day, God basically sets up the supporting, the life support system for planet Earth, both nutrition and the atmosphere as well. And all of these things are self-reproducing, and they reproduce within their own kind. And this is going to be very important for us later. God made very broad genetic groups that could reproduce within themselves. So if you've got a plant that can be crossbred with another plant, they are part of the original plant group that God made at the beginning of creation on day number three. If the plants cannot crossbreed, then they are very likely not part of the same group. We do have the possibility that some plants might be so far to the edge of their original parameters that they might not be able to reproduce with others, but that's because of loss of genetic information. When we get to the animals, I'll explain what I mean by that a little bit better. But it's another example that we can see in science itself of design. Things did not happen over long periods of time by some sort of chance. These things were programmed well ahead of time so that they could be self-sustaining. And then there was evening. Remember, all Jewish days begin at sunset. And there was morning. Day number three, another verbal reminder. We're talking about literal days in the creation week here. Verse number 14. God said, "Let the lights in the expanse of the heavens be to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs, and for seasons, and for days, and years, and let them be lights in the expanse of the heaven to give light upon the earth." And it was so. God made the two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, and the lesser light to rule the night, and the stars. So we've got three specific types of lights that we're talking about here. We've got the sun, which is the energy source for planet Earth. It pumps all of that energy into our atmosphere, allowing the plants to use that and pass that on to the animals that eat them. So the engine of our solar system, the engine of our planetary system, is the sun. It's the greater light. The visual light is also very important because we need to be able to see as we go about the things that we do. The animals need that as well. So that's the greater light. The lesser light is a reference to the moon, which reflects the light of the sun. And this moon is not just simply a light bearer, it also affects the planet Earth by having this tidal lock. It keeps the waters of the oceans from being stagnant, being just static and sitting there. And so it keeps the tidal action going, and this is very important to the system as well. So we've got light and all of that provided by these two, but we've also got energy. We've got a maintenance of the water system on planet Earth thanks to the moon. These two lights, along with the stars, which we know are very distant light sources, including planets that are closer to us, but they still reflect and look like light sources, these things all provide a calendar system. I'm going to express to you my belief that when God created the world, He created it with a very precise time system. The moon revolved around the earth, showing different phases because of that, in an exactly 30-day period of time. And that accounted for our months. Then we had 12 months of exactly 30 days each, resulting in a 360-day solar year. And this allowed everybody on planet Earth to be able to keep track of the passage of time and to make appointments and to make decisions about when to do certain aspects of agriculture. That's the reason that God gives for putting these lights in the order that they did, or that he did. The stars even provide mechanisms for the passage of time, the passage of seasons, because of when certain constellations arise. That helps understand which season we're in. But also, these things provide directional issues. When the sun comes up in the east, then you know exactly where the east is. When it goes down in the west, you know exactly where the west is. Same thing with the moon. The stars all provide some sort of directional mechanism at night. So all of these things God put in place for the benefit of those that would be living in this new system to know directions, passage of time, and even how to make arrangements for different times of the year. This now provides a permanent source of life to planet Earth. And you may remember I mentioned that in the first couple of days, God's light would have been sufficient to provide the energy for things moving forward. It may be that God had provided a temporary light structure during those couple of days. But now that the permanent light system is in place, none of that would have been required to continue. And I paralleled it with the idea of what we do in our own building of buildings. We'll have a temporary light system set up, but once we start putting in the permanent fixtures and have the power to them, we remove the temporary lighting system because it's no longer necessary. And so that, I think, probably happened here on day number four. And then we read this in the next verse. Verse number 17, God set them in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth, to rule over the day and over the night, to separate the light from the darkness. God saw that it was good. There was evening, there was morning, the fourth day, or day number four. So now we have the oxygen system, oxygen-carbon dioxide exchange system, that's all set in place. The light system is set in place. The food system is set in place. All of the directions and the calendar system, all of that is set up. So everything is ready to start introducing animal life. Plant life is one thing. It's a source of energy conversion. Animal life, and you can even hear this in its name, is animated. It can move on its own. It's a living creature. Those things are going to be put in place next by God on day number five. Verse 20, God said, "Let the waters swarm with swarms of living creatures. Let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the heavens." And birds is a little bit too precise of English for the Hebrew or even the Greek here, I think. The word is the sense of flying creatures. So it's not just avian. We're talking about bats and flying reptiles of different sorts. Anything that flies in the air, insects, are called flyers here. The swarmers in the water, these are going to be more of the smaller groups first. And then he'll start talking about the larger sea creatures in a moment. So he's populating the water and he's populating, shall we say, the sky, so that there's life everywhere. Whether you're looking into the depths of the sea or whether you're looking up into the sky above you, you will see life. You will see animation. You will see God's design in place. Then verse 21, God created the great sea creatures and every living creature that moves, with which the waters swarm according to their kinds, every winged bird or every winged flying thing according to its kind, and God saw that it was good. So this is all according to his design parameters. He wanted the system to be self-sustaining, and that also includes to have living creatures that will help sustain the vegetation life, because so many of these creatures are going to help pollinate and spread the seeds of and fertilize, provide everything else that these plants are going to need in order to do their part. So God is making a place that keeps going on its own. And he even makes the animals capable of reproducing so that once he creates one generation, they will then create all the further generations needed to fill the entire earth with this sustaining mechanism. Verse 22, God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply, fill the waters and the seas, and let birds multiply on the earth." So God makes life probably in a very localized area and allows it then to spread outward from there. The same was probably true with the plants. He probably makes plants in one specific spot and then allows them to be spread out from there. He makes all the animals in one specific spot and lets them spread out from there. He makes all of the sea creatures in one specific spot and lets them spread out from there. And again, the parameters, the classification of these kinds is different than what our modern scientists try to use today. When our modern scientists do designation, they try to classify it by some very, very specific mechanisms within the body, specific body parts, things of that nature. Whereas we can look at this and say the big classification was, can they interbreed? And God made all the various kinds of animals to have a wide range of specialization, so that all the dogs came from God's original dog kind. So St. Bernards and Pekingese, they're all dogs. They are all related to one another and related backward to the original dog kind. Now, physical size makes it hard for a St. Bernard and a Pekingese to reproduce, but genetically they could. And so that's how we know they are part of the original dog kind. Same thing with cats. The same thing with horses. Horses and donkeys and zebras, all of these things are related. They can be interbred, and that shows they're all from the original same kind that God created. Now, when you get to the very edge of the genetic pool, there comes some barriers because you can't breed beyond the edge of this genetic kind. So you can see that happen when you get mules. A mule cannot reproduce. But it is a combination of a couple of different animals within that same kind, a donkey and a horse. But you can tell you're bumping up against the edge of God's original design when you can no longer breed the animal that's been reproduced by breeding. And we can't talk about how mankind monkeys around with the genetic code. That's cheating. What we're talking about is the natural breeding capability. So horses cannot crossbreed with bovine, that is, cattle. because they're two different kinds. Cats cannot be bred with dogs. They're two different kinds. And so this is the biblical classification of the animal world. Verse number 23. Oh, and by the way, before I close up on that, the fact of that shows that evolution doesn't work. When you cannot move outside of the kind that God originally created, then you cannot expect to be able to move from one sort of thing to another sort of thing. So fishes cannot produce amphibians. And amphibians cannot produce reptiles. Reptiles cannot produce birds. Birds cannot produce mammals. There's a barrier that does not allow the movement from one to the other. That's very, very clear. And even the fossil record shows that. All these different kinds are identified clearly in the pre-flood past as already being pretty much established. We can even see it in the insect world. Fruit flies will always be fruit flies. Fruit flies have been used to experiment with mutations because they can produce so many generations over a period of time. And you can get a lot of different weird fruit flies. Some are wingless, some are sightless, some have different color variations. But guess what? They're all fruit flies. And so the same is true with all of God's original kinds. All right, let's wrap up with this day by reading verse 23. There was evening, there was morning, the fifth day. So day number five, which sets the stage for God's ultimate creation to come into existence. He's going to finish up with the animals, and then he's going to move to the crowning achievement, all of the people.